party tonight!
What?
TV party tonight!
Oh! We got nothing better to do than watch TV and have a couple of brews.
Don't want to talk about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
Oh, my circuits!
Everybody loves Hypnotoad!
Scary Dog!
Blurson at Blurnville!
Futurama!
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattlegion Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified you can call me Wheezy, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, our favorite show is AEW Double or Nothing 2020, brought to you by the good people at All Elite Wrestling and Daily's Place. And the TIAA Bankfield and the city of Jacksonville. Joining me tonight is one of the podsmen. We ride again. Ladies and gentlemen, my brother from another mother, the president of the Canadian office. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Chris Bailey. How do you do?
Well, the question is, Mark Radlich, which version of Chris Bailey are you getting tonight? You don't even have to drown me in a pool to find out that it's version 1 through 3 here this evening.
Oh, goodness.
The Canadian office is fired up, and we're ready to talk about some AEW Double or Nothing 2020, baby.
All right, so have you been keeping up with the product between Revolution and now? Have you been mostly watching the show?
Yes, absolutely. So I've seen pretty well every episode. And they have actually done a good job with the product. When I contrast what WWE is offering to what AEW is doing, I think AEW has actually done a better job of showcasing a product that still seems like an actual product. Like, you take a look at what WWE does, it always feels like there's something missing. It doesn't have that. Those folks that are just sitting in the crowd, even though they're a bunch of wrestlers and stagehands, really makes a difference, man, to the way I perceive the show. Every single time I watch WWE and looking at that empty arena, it feels empty. Like, it feels like I don't want to watch it. So believe it or not, I think AEW during the current situation era has actually done a better job, including this pay-per-view.
Yeah, I would agree.
Spoiler.
I would agree. And WWE finally got the hint and put fans in the audience in the last Monday Night Raw show.
I want to talk about that. So they actually put – they copied AEW after, painfully – I'm sure they thought this through, that they absolutely weren't going to go that route, and they were holding back. So they took the NXT trainees and they stuck them at ringside, okay? And they had them cheering. But the difference is – AEW, when they have people at ringside, you sort of get tricked into believing that these are an actual audience. But here with WWE last night, especially on Raw, it felt like these were the NXT trainees cheering on. You know what I mean? It didn't have that same vibe. It felt ripped off. It felt like it didn't have a genuine connection. And that's something that AEW can wear with pride, that they figure this shit out in the COVID era.
Yeah, what the WWE has lacked in recent decades, it's been going on for a while now, and we've talked about this in other elements, but let's just talk about their presentation of crowds. I used to do extra work in Los Angeles. I was an extra in a bunch of movies and television shows. And
were you like a stunt ass?
I'll tell you about that later. But it's very controlled. You're told where to walk, you're told where to sit, you're told to react to certain things. I was a theater goer in what's the name of this show? The redhead and the gay guy. Oh gosh, they just recently did it.
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace. Yeah, I was an extra on an episode of Will and Grace where I was sitting in a theater, and I actually had to look engaged in the movie that was supposed to be playing. That, of course, there was no movie. Same thing when I was in Man on the Moon. I'm in the scene where Andy Kaufman is playing live at Radio City Music Hall.
And again, how am I just finding out this information? How have I not known that you were in Man on the Moon? This feels like a piece of information that I'm. It's like discovering Santa's not real or something. Spoiler, by the way.
I don't talk about it much. My point is, like, even then, as an extra, you can't be, like, you know, like, reading a book. Like, you still have to, you know, it's still a very controlled environment. And it all feels very, like, unnatural. So you see it on screen, and then you realize from the way they're shooting it and everything, like, oh, okay, we're basically just talking, you know, moving scenery, living scenery. That's kind of the way WWE presented its crowd. It's all the trainees, which was obvious. All of them were wearing WWE t-shirts. Like,
yes.
Like, you know, at least when AEW does it, some of them are wearing t-shirts. Some of them are dressed in, like MJF comes dressed like how he normally dresses. Scarf and everything. you have Pineapple Pete there and his Hawaiian shirt. There's all kinds of shit going on. And I'll talk about this in a second. Like, the stuff that, like, happens with Lance Archer and Britt Baker, that's hilarious. And it's very interactive.
It is hilarious.
And it's very dynamic. Whereas the WWE does it, and it gave them noise, but it was literally like they might as well have put up, like you would do at a talk show, applause.
Yep, cheer. Yes, exactly.
You know, so
it felt really canned and really artificial, and it didn't. And AEW has figured that out. Like, I watched this entire pay per view, and it did not register in my mind until, of course, the main event where they didn't have the noise. That, you know, this was artificial canned heat. You know what I mean? Yeah. It felt legit.
Before the world ended in January, I watched that No Holds Barred deathmatch show. And it's a small crowd. Like, it's like a standing room only, small crowd. They maybe had like 100 people, maybe. It was probably less. But that felt live. That felt authentic. So it's not the amount of people. It's
exactly
your ability to let people act like people, which is what AEW does versus WWE. That being said, the angles going into Double or Nothing were the TV title tournament, or TNT tournament, whatever you want to call it. It's a TV title.
Yes. A very cheap-looking TV title, by the way. We'll get into that a little bit later.
Everything from Revolution to now was building up Lance Archer, the Murder Hawk, and the introduction of his handler, Jake the Snake. And let me ask you, because they introduced another character. They introduced three. They all got, like, signed at the same time. Lance Archer, who came in as Jake's protege, and they, like, went right after Cody in the Nightmare Collective. And then you have big trucker Brody Lee, who they decided was going to be the Exalted One, and they basically made him, like, a Vince McMahon parody.
Hey, listen, he doesn't like sneezing, right? He doesn't like anyone sneezing or coughing
in
his presence.
Get it? Get it?
So it's two different things we have going on here. So you got Brody Lee, who's basically a parody of Vince McMahon, and a pretty shallow one as well. I don't really buy him, you know what I mean, that gimmick. I'm glad he was the Exalted One, to be quite honest with you, because it sort of works as a gimmick. But, you know, that gimmick with that group has never sat well with me. And if you listen to any of our old AEW reviews, you'll know that that particular organization is, I'm not a fan of that particular collective. So
yeah.
As for Jake the Snake and the Murder Hawk, now that is a different ball of wax altogether, because you got a guy who's you know, a future prospect in the Murder Hawk. You know what I mean? He's going to be a pretty big deal. Well,
I love the Murder Hawk.
Yes,
I stop fast-forwarding when the Murder Hawk comes on.
Yes, and I mean, he was one of the few guys when he was Lance Hoyt in TNA. You know, he got over on his own, even with that stupid Hoyt gimmick he had going on there. But do you ever recall when he was Lance Hoyt?
No, I didn't watch much TNA past 2007-08.
So they built him up as a Hulk Hogan guy, where he would power up in the whole nine yards, and the fans would chant Hoyt, Hoyt, Hoyt. Hoytomania was running wild in TNA for a short period.
That's unfortunate.
Yes, it was. It was.
And then the third person they brought out was Matt Hardy. So, those three guys were part of, like, your three biggest angles, and there was a lot of payoff of their introduction and, what they brought to the last X amount of weeks of television since Revolution. So let's take these one by one, because I have a question about this. I'm not sure everyone landed where they were supposed to. Like, for example, this is my idea. I'm fine with Matt Hardy being part of the Elite, especially when the Young Bucks weren't able to get the TV because of the quarantine.
Right. They had to do something. Was Matt Hardy the right fit for that group? That's another story.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, Matt Hardy is doing his broken Matt Hardy gimmick, which was popular in TNA, but there were like five people watching TNA, and one of them was someone's parents. So, I don't get the broken thing. Like, I was excited when the Hardy Boys showed up at WrestleMania in Orlando a few years ago, the one with Roman Reigns and the last ride of The Undertaker.
Brother, I was there. I was right there with you, man. I watched that show. I was there. Loved it.
I was yelling out delete like all the other nerds. You know, it's fine. Like, but, and they allowed him to do a degree of that in the WWE, but, and this is like the big difference, I think, between WWE and AEW, because they're basically the same company, but one has a dad who may or may not be in times, you know, in tune with the times right now, and may or may not have gone well past his use by date, and may or may not have an obsession with tits and poop jokes. The other one has no dad at all. The other one is Annie's fucking orphanage. It's a bunch of kids running around going, "It's a hard knock life," and they're like knocking buckets over, and it's ridiculous.
Mrs. Hannigan?
Yeah, Mrs. Hannigan is drunk on bathtub gin. She doesn't know what the fuck is going on. And so, yeah, so there you have it. That's literally the difference between these two companies. And so they're like, you know, the WWE is like, "Matt Hardy, tone it the fuck down. No one knows what you're doing. You seem crazy pants."
AEW, well, they didn't get what he was doing, so they clearly didn't understand his gimmick. They literally, how they introduced the broken, or the woken gimmick, sorry. He was super woke at that point. But anyway, their idea of the broken character was having him on the Jumbotron acting crazy. That was literally it.
And
they
then,
didn't give him his regular vignettes. They didn't do anything with him. He was just, "Oh, yes." Oh, it was terrible.
And so everyone wants to go where there's no dad to tell him no. So they all go to AEW, no matter how much money they're being thrown. Because at that point, it's not about the money anymore. It's about the art. Sorry, that made me choke. So Matt Hardy goes to AEW, and he's like, "I want to be an artist. I want to do all the things, and I don't want to hear no." And they're like, "There's no no in this company. It's all yes. We're all yes girls. We'll do anything. Okay? We have a guy who wrestles with his hands in his pockets. It's fine. You want to wrestle a midget? We've got one." And so he comes and he starts doing, like, this Damascus bullshit, and the Vanguard one, and I don't know what you, but this was like the worst part of like the last 6 weeks for me, was Matt Hardy and Damascus and this whole stupid gimmick.
Well, the entire thing was amplified even worse with the fact that there was no crowd. So there was no crowd energy. There was no heat behind it. It seemed like a very strange, bizarre guy that should be locked up doing like really, really bad sketch comedy. It was really, really out of place, and it felt uncomfortable to watch on TV, to be quite honest with you. Go ahead.
When he was like, "I see Abe Lincoln in the crowd," I swear to God, I got visions of Pete Dragon. Do you remember when the guy dresses up as the old lady and they're trying to con the town into buying the snake oil, and he's playing a deaf woman, and so, you know, they pour the snake oil in the ear, and he's like, "I hear children giggling." That's what I got out of that interaction.
It was so bad. Like, so he's one of the surprise gets for AEW, okay? So he's supposed to be a big deal. He's a huge signing, and you have him appear on a balcony at the end of their TV show. And, you know, subsequent weeks from there, he had that very, very awkward interview with Jericho. Did you see that? Where they went face-to-face in the ring, and they
sort of, like, when he started doing the "I see Abe Lincoln" in the crowd. and Martin Luther King. And like neither one would have
Jericho
showed up to this.
Buried his ass on that. If you watch that promo, Jericho let him have it. No kayfabe needed, sir. He buried that character dead in that one.
Well,
called his gimmick stupid. He said, you look like an idiot. Look at you. And he was 100% true. I was agreeing with him 100%.
So weeks go by. They do the one like practice for the Stadium Stampede where it's the 2-on-2, which, by the way, Le Sex God is hilarious.
Oh, man. He is money. I guarantee you.
And, like, Artie goes into the ice machine, comes out as a different character. That was the trial run for what we're going to see in the Stadium Stampede. And that's, like, when it hit me, really, that, like, AEW... And I know, like, Jim Cornette says stuff like this. This is not sports-based wrestling. Yeah, basically, like, if you're a fan that likes WWE silly but doesn't like grown-ups... and doesn't like authority, and just thinks like Kenny Omega and Orange Cassidy and Pac and Matt Hardy should just be able to do whatever the fuck they want to do. Just everybody come in and fuck a donkey. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you got to have a plan for these characters. I mean, you can't just let everybody, you know, do their own thing without any rhyme or reason. It has to make sense in a narrative, and it just doesn't. And, I mean, especially you take a look at the Matt Hardy situation in the main event, which we'll get into a little bit later. It just felt out of place and awkward. So, I mean, you're letting these people, you know, basically do their gimmick where it doesn't even make sense. You know, build to it. How does it feel within the narrative? How does it feel within the feud? It doesn't. That's the whole problem.
One of the last people I talked to with this, and I can't remember the name of the school. Help me out with this. With the school where, like, even as a child, you can just design your own program, your own learning experience.
I do not know. I did not avail of that, sir.
The joke would be funny if people listening like know what I'm talking about, because I think we've said it on this podcast at some wrestling thing or another. But that's basically what it's like. It's just like everyone is kind of like, that's the attraction to AEW. It's a steady paycheck, and there's no dad to tell you no, stupid. Yep. Anyway, so that's Matt Hardy.
Yep. So yes.
So Lance Archer, right? I love Lance Archer. I loved him in the G1, and like I have like little wrestling buddies that. Being very dismissive of them. I have wrestling buddies that I'm in a chat with, and they're like, Lance Archer, people only like him now because of the last year's G1, but he's been misused and, you know, he hasn't gotten over anywhere else he's ever been. And it's like, I don't fucking care.
He's over here. I'll tell you that.
He's the most interesting looking guy they have on AEW Wednesday nights. Like, he's big. He's angry looking. I love that he runs out and like punches a random fan. I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, oh my god, that is. We'll talk about that a little bit later too. What an amazing entrance for him.
Yeah, I love that. Like he's just so chaotic and so angry. He's raw and he hits a cameraman. You know, or he hits a
fan.
And
I love it. Anyone who uses a modified Razor's Edge is cool in my opinion. Anyway.
Yes. So I love Lance Archer. Here's my issue. Did he need Jake the Snake? That's a 2-part question. Did he need Jake the Snake? Because wouldn't Jake the Snake have been better off as the Exalted One?
Oh, 10 times better. That gimmick was tailor-made for either Jake the Snake or Raven. Guarantee you either one of those would have fit perfectly. But they took Brody Lee and his Vince McMahon gimmick, which, you know, mixed results there. But, yeah, I mean, Lance Archer, does he need Jake the Snake Roberts to answer that question? I'm going to say yes initially. But I think it's you could easily break away from that, and he could go on his own. Just to get the audience acclimated to him, I think was a good idea to associate him with a Jake the Snake. You know what I mean? Someone who plays mind games and gets over his gimmick.
They couldn't use another old wrestler that was lying around. Like, you know, was Tully Blanchard not available for any of this? He was doing shit with Shawn Spears. Maybe that's something they could have had Tully do. Like, you know, things didn't work out with Shawn. So I went out.
Where is Tully Blanchard? Is he's hiding from COVID, isn't he?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
Why can't, you know, even by satellite, have Tully up on the screen and be like, you know, just doing all the stuff that Jake did, basically, and then send out this fucking angry big old bastard that did all the things he did. Like, I'm okay with everything Lance Archer did. I mean, Jake the Snake throwing the snake on Brandy and, like, dry-humping her, I probably could have lived without. I would have much preferred Lance Archer just put her through a table. Like, same
100%.
Effect.
100%. Yes.
So, and I'm going to get to this when I get to the match with Cody, but, like, basically, you know, a couple of months of Lance Archer just tearing through the Nightmare Collective, tearing through the Nightmare Family, tearing through the TNA ranks, and gunning for the TNA title, the TNT title, and being like, I am here to just kill people, and nothing can stop me. And that's
instead,
good enough.
Instead, they make him lose.
Yeah, we'll
cleanly
get to that.
In a title tournament.
Yep, we'll get to that.
Which is mind-boggling. But
I just wanted to get to the lead-up, because like I said, I liked everything they did with Lance Archer, minus the bit with Brandy, which again, put her through a table. Good, just as good.
Put her through the damn table, yes. Don't molest her with a snake.
You know, Britt Baker hitting with a shoe, even funnier.
So I've turned the tide on my Britt Baker hatred, by the way.
Oh, good.
I am fully in on this gimmick, man.
And instead, what they should have done was had Jake the Snake be the Exalted One and have his hand, the hand of Jake the Snake, be Brody Lee. Brody Lee should not talk. I know Brody Lee thinks he can talk. I know Brody Lee thinks he's doing a good job doing a Vince McMahon impression. I'm going to whisper this. I don't know if the secret's out. He's not. He's not good.
No. He is not funny and not good. And I think the entire gimmick bypasses a lot of people. So I mean, it's set up for an insider crowd, which is mostly what AEW is, but his imitation is so poor that I think it even misses the boat with some of those folks.
I have my same problem with the Dark Order that I have with the Monday Night Messiah. You have a person who... Chris, if I were to, you know, bring you into the Rattledge Collective, I would have to offer you something. Okay?
Yes, sir.
My personality must be David Koresh-like, but there also must be something that I'm offering you that makes you say, yeah, I'll leave my family. Yeah, I'll leave my job. I'll follow you wherever you go. Because you're off salvation. You know, redemption, riches, power.
These something.
Right. These people offer their followers something. The, you know,
a
the
gimp mask and a job on their TV show.
The ability to pet tigers. Anything.
Hot topic.
You know, I'm just saying, like I'm thinking about, like, Tiger King. Like, the reason that worked was because there are people that, like, I'm willing to leave my family to work with to pet tigers. I want to play with animals. I don't understand it, but apparently that's a thing. Religion works because it offers an explanation for things that befuddle people. It also offers, like, when you think about, like, Christianity, you know, it offers salvation. If you're a Catholic, you know, you go to a priest, he absolves you of your sins. You don't go there, and he just rambles incessantly, and you're like, all right, good. Seth Rollins says nothing. He offers nothing. Brody Lee abuses his followers. He offers them nothing. He says nothing. The Dark Order and the Monday Night Messiah gimmicks are empty vessels for nothing. And the thing is, they could 1,000%. Be something.
1,000%.
They
yes.
absolutely
yes,
could
sir.
Be something. But they say nothing. They offer... There's no message on... said on television that these guys are saying. And that's where I think nobody at AEW knows what to say, what to make these things. They just go, ha-ha, our fans listen to wrestling podcasts. They've heard the stuff about Vince hating sneezing, you know, and other... And Jim Cornette says, like, half of what they've done, he's never seen Vince do. Like, nobody right. eats before me.
But they translated that into the main event of this pay-per-view, or the co-main event to this pay-per-view. You know what I mean? They thought this was a strong enough gimmick with the Dark Order, which, by the way, should not be within a fucking hectare of the the main event. And they stick Brody Lee doing a Vince McMahon impression in the main event. So the only one thing that I will say about this is at least he was challenging for, you know, the main belt on the show. Outside of that, this gimmick is useless and pointless.
Yeah, I think Jake the Snake could have gotten this over. I think Jake the Snake,
100%.
Yes. Without having been given anything, like, hey, we want you to be a cult leader. Okay, what's my message? I don't understand. Okay, shut the fuck up. Go away, Tony Khan. Go away, Cody. I will go in the back. I will come up with something. I will save this for you because I'm Jake the fucking Snake.
Yes, he could ramble on and say, I'm going to have my way with you, my man. Just, you know, just do all that gimmick that he does, all that stuff, and everyone will buy it 100%, and everybody will love the Dark Order. But instead, they put Brody Lee, poor man's Vince McMahon, getting the shit kicked out of him by Dean Ambrose.
And you could have had Brody Lee do everything that Brody Lee did, minus the stupid Vince impression, and it doesn't change television. Because you have Jake the Snake doing it.
Oh.
Like, imagine just Jake the Snake out there in an in a throne made of fucking skulls or some shit, and a cloak like the Emperor. It's like, kill.
And what are they doing with Jake the Snake? Like, don't they have like wardrobe people in this company? He's been wearing that same damn purple shirt, that purple dress shirt, that ill fitting purple dress shirt, by the way, for weeks.
That promo,
I don't know,
at either ends of a long table between him and Arn. Oh. I did not have the patience for it. Talk about
it,
two
was
rambling
brutal
old men.
I think that they thought they were being inventive and that they were hearkening back, hey, we got two amazing promo guys here, you know what I mean? I mean, Arn Anderson, you know, you say what you want about him and his career, but I mean, cutting a promo was his absolute strength. I mean, he was the pitch man for the Horsemen. Flair was all, you know, Luger, doing all that garbage, and you had Arn, who did the cool promo and sold the tickets, you know what I mean?
By the way, you don't even and have to be a cult leader. Fucking Flair. Flair sold the Horsemen. So, I mean, Arn was like, we're the baddest, we're the best, and we're going to rip your pants off and fuck you in the ass. Great. That's Arn.
Arn told the story.
Right.
And Flair brought the girls to the Marriott after the show. That's all it was.
Flair just would show up with models or rats or whatever on his arm. With gold, you know, my shoes cost more than your house. Like, everyone gets it. Everyone wants to be in the Horsemen because they want to be surrounded by the wealthy guy. They want some
of
that.
And they had a point. They wanted all the belts. They wanted all the power. They had a reason for existing. What does the Dark Order... I fear to think why the Dark Order actually exists if someone tried to explain that. I like wearing gimp masks and losing.
Well, it's like, okay, I get why you're going after incels and ne'er-do-wells and neckbeards. Totally get that. They are ripe for the picking. What are you offering them? All right, so...
Nothing.
Like, I'm okay. I was okay with Brody Lee versus John Moxley. I'll talk about their match when we get to it. Like, but I was okay with the idea of Brody Lee versus John Moxley for the title when you've got everybody else wrapped up in the gimmick match at the end of the night with the Inner Circle. Okay.
Yes.
Terrific. It just needed to... It needed to be pushed by Jake the Snake, and Brody Lee just needed to be, like, his quiet henchman. And I know that, like, Luke Harper, you know, is going to get wind of this podcast. Ha ha. And be like, but I wanted to talk, sir. Your best feature is your eyes, because they look like crazy people eyes. And your worst feature is your ability to promo. You suck.
He needs to find Eric Rowan fast and give him one of those big phony mallets again. That needs to happen. And go back to his bludgeon brother gimmick and shut his mouth.
Yeah, yeah. This did not work out for him. So that was basically... And then I think like in like a distant fourth... was because of the COVID and everything. They finally took the belt off the 9-year-old Japanese schoolgirl, and they put it on Nyla Rose, which is where it should have gotten in the first place. And she got to tear ass for a few weeks. Good for fucking Nyla Rose. You know, day late and a dollar short.
Yep.
And that brings us to Double or Nothing 2020, which started off with a mystery opponent and Darby Allin, who's going to die in the ring. Mark my words.
He literally, I thought he was gone in this one. So there was three spots in between. So let's talk about who was in this match, first of all. So let's run down the little roster
here. I got it right here. Darby Allin, Boom Boom, Colt Cabana, Orange, Cassidy, Joey Janela, or Jelly Nutella, whatever you like, Scorpio Sky, Kip Sabian, with Jimmy Havoc in his... Gosh, now my brain is off. There was a band that did that gimmick, but they were wearing white tuxedos with like bloodshots on it.
Yes, Anyway, I thought it was a cool look for Jimmy Havoc. It's much better than the you know, the S&M Bane that he was doing for a while. So it's pretty cool.
The heroin punk rock look? Yeah, sure. Frankie Kazarian, who's letting his hair grow in, and Yo Luchasaurus, who should only speak in roars. He should just growl and roar at people.
So when you start this thing out, I mean, you've got a lot of talent that I think AEW put heavy bets on originally up front. So you had, you know, how did this match start? We had Kazarian taking on Scorpio Sky. So it looked like a few months ago before the world ended in January that they were going to give Scorpio Sky a little push. Nothing to be seen here anymore. I think that is water under the bridge. Yeah,
they gave him a shot against Jericho, and then they were like, all right, back to the tag teams with you.
Right away. What do you think of Kip Sabian? Super bad Kip Sabian. I kind of dig that gimmick. He's similar, like, you know, he's got his chick with him. He's got a Shawn Michaels, you know, Sensational Sherry little vibe going on there. I kind of dig that character.
He's going to end up being Mark Marrowed. People are going to end up into Penelope Ford because she's a hot piece of ass. You know, and Jimmy and
yes.
Kip. Kip Sabian looks like Alex Wright. Like, he just has this, like, long, lanky, nothing going on body, and he looks like a douchebag. Like, they should be using him to, like, put over mid-card level faces. Like, Kip Sabian's like, whatever.
He's a good hand is what he is.
Yeah,
he's a good hand to put on TV shows to pair him up and lose to, you know, other capable wrestlers who do you want to push.
Yeah, if you want to push somebody for, like, the TV title. And they need a couple of good matches. Kip Sabian's a good guy to put over. Use him to put the guy over.
Yeah, so you had Kaz and Sky. They chain wrestled each other, did a little bit of, you know, crap on the go. Then you had Kip Sabian come out with Penelope Ford. God bless her friggin' heart. you know, and then Darby Allin comes out on the skateboard. And, of course, business picks up at that point. And, man, he did some crazy-ass shit. So I want to talk about the first big stunt of this match.
Yeah, the one where he killed himself?
He stands on the top of this epically huge ladder with a skateboard, by the way. His opponent was lying prone on a ladder at ringside, and he jumps off the ladder, and he doesn't dive like Jeff Hardy, sort of flip-flop over the top. This guy just literally jumps from and this ladder is huge, by the way. And he tries to crush him with the skateboard standing in midair. It is the most craziest spot I have ever seen. Of course, his opponent got out of the way and he killed himself, but he lived to fight another day to fight a more treacherous, almost near-death experience a little bit later in the match.
So, yeah, he sold his knee. I guess he didn't really hurt his knee. It looked horrible. Somebody made a comment on Twitter about Darby Allin where, like, when they're going over matches and people just suggest only spots that'll murder Darby Allin in the ring, and he just says yes to all of them. He's like, here's what we're going to do. We're going to drop you off the ceiling into an ordinary drinking glass, head first.
Yes!
And Darby Allin's like, yeah, I love it. This is what I'm here for.
But how about we add thumbtacks?
Hey, so, everyone's fighting. It's all fine. The next thing that happens that's of any note is Orange Cassidy.
Orange Cassidy is next. Yes, sir. So what do you think of Orange Cassidy, by the way? Have you lightened up on him either bit, or is he no longer a epic sensation?
I mean, he's the boogeyman.
Yes.
That's it. He's a giant-ass fucking gimmick. And here's the thing, and it's kind of the theme of this show tonight. I'm over, like, where's my wrestling? I'm kind of over that whole thing. I'm over that. This has to be believable. This is WWE-style cartoon wrestling, but this product appeals to neckbeards and incels, and WWE appears to, like, children and their parents. And that's it. You know, maybe had the world not ended, the NWA might have gotten some traction, and that would have been a place to go for real wrestling. If the USA Network had not given NXT 2 hours of primetime television, you could go to NXT for real wrestling, but real in quotes, but there's just nowhere to go now. You know, the pandemic killed NWA and NXT and USA Network killed NXT. So,
whoa, wholesale lamb to the slaughter.
Yup. So there's like nowhere for me to go now to watch like good old fashioned, you know, catch as catch can wrestling that looks like a fight.
And now we have the man who does none of that, which is Orange Cassidy, who basically wrestles with his hands in his pocket. He's a walking gimmick. He gets his spots in, of course, and does his little, you know, dives and flips and kip ups with his hands in his pocket. You know, all that stuff.
So you ask me like what I think of him. Doesn't matter what I think of him. Like, he's fine. He makes me giggle here and there, but I laugh at stupid shit. You know who fucking
That's his point. But he's good in like 2 minute intervals, and then he's got no purpose. Like after 2 minutes, the gimmick is done. So what do you do with him then?
Yeah, it's like I said, he's the boogeyman. He's Santino Marella. You know who fucking hates him though? Just despises him. Like every time he comes out, like just starts screaming at the television for him to go away. He has go away heat, like Xbox go away heat, with my 6 year old.
Oh really?
My son thinks he's the. Like, he hates Baron Corbin. He's very fond of calling Baron Corbin the douche. I don't know where he got douche from, but...
Very fitting. Very fitting.
He's like, oh my god, what's with the douche? And then Orange Cassidy comes up like, and he's like, who wrestles with the hands in their pockets? This is the dumbest shit ever. This is my 6-year-old. He may not have said shit, but... I picture my 6-year-old translated through my voice. This is the dumbest shit ever. Nobody wrestles with their fucking hands in their pockets. Somebody kick the shit out of this asshole and get him off my television. My son fucking hates Orange Cassidy.
Well, he's not a fan, clearly. My goodness. he's not selling the non-kayfabe we got going on here. I don't understand.
So this is the world we live in. There's arenas full of incels and neckbeards who find Orange Cassidy a delight. Who are like buy into his pie in the face horse shit. But my 6 year old's like, no, fuck that guy. My 6 year old My 6 year old is more hardcore than the wrestling fans of AEW.
He's more highbrow than the AEW audience, I feel.
Yeah, totally. So he goes out there and he does his comedy shtick. Like he's like wandering around and he goes out there and because he's a lazy sloth. You know, he like reaches up and he can't reach the title. Her,
he did a funny spot. He didn't even want to set up the ladder. That was even funnier. He couldn't be bothered. Like he knew he had to get up there, and he was sort of reaching up trying to get that belt, and he knew he couldn't do it, but he was too lazy to get the ladder, which is even funnier. And when the ladder did get set up, Colt Cabana just comes in and throws him out of the way, which was so cool. But Colt really had no part of this match. Kip Sabian was just there to do a couple flip flops. And then, of course, you brought in Luchasaurus, which was the 8th entrance. And he came in and kicked ass a little bit. And that led into the debut of our mystery competitor.
Yes. Brian Cage.
What did you think of the mystery competitor?
I love Brian Cage.
I loved it.
Yeah. No,
me too.
Brian Cage with Taz as the winner of this thing, I thought was the right call. I guess he'll be fighting Jon Moxley at Fighter Fest, whenever that's going to be.
It's too early to put him in that. He needs to be squashing some asses first. I love the pairing with Taz. Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. You got a guy who used to be a killer in the ring in ECW, and now you're putting Brian Cage, who can't talk. Keep him off the mic, by the way.
Yeah.
He sounds like I'm not gonna bring up the guy he sounds like, but you know, he really sounds like he's more boyish than he should be, you know what I mean?
Not
so
for
having
nothing.
Taz as the killer promo.
Not for nothing, but if they were going to bring Taz as a manager, why didn't they put him with Lance Archer and then have him come out with Brian Cage?
Perfect fit.
And have just, like, this stable full of fucking murdering monsters around Taz. You know, and have Taz be like, have Taz speak for the Jim Cornettes of the world. They'd be like, I am tired of the clown bullshit that goes on in this company. I am here with real ass kickers. I am here to tear shit
real
up.
Ass kissers.
Yeah. I am here to tear shit up and take titles and beat people's faces in. And I am finding all the guys to do it. And then, like, you know, slowly but surely build up a stable around Taz. I think it'd be great.
Yeah, there was a couple real, real big spots for Brian Cage in this too, man. They were really trying to put him over. So one funny part was when he actually climbed the ladder with Orange Cassidy on his back. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Another spot, which was probably the biggest death spot I've ever seen.
Yeah.
He put the ladder over his head with Darby Allin lying flat on the ladder, and then he proceeded to take the ladder and throw it out of the ring with Darby Allin still on the ladder.
I didn't remember if Brian Cage was an Evolve or not. I looked at his wiki. before we came on, but there was like another big like muscly wrestler guy who used to kick the shit out of Darby Allin and Evolve. I actually thought it was Brian Cage. I guess it was somebody else. But yeah, poor Darby Allin. He's going to die in the ring. Like, AEW is going to be responsible for a murder.
Yeah, and it almost happened here twice, so.
Yeah. That was a rough-looking spot to where I was like, why? Why would you be a part of it? Why would you agree to it on either side? Why if you're Brian Cage? Why if you're Darby Allin? I don't understand. Like, so here's the spot, right? You're going to lie on your back across this ladder, and I'm just going to throw the ladder. At me?
Yeah, no, I'm going to press you over my head with you on it, and I'm going to toss you over. Actually, didn't he toss him over the ring post, which
right.
always looks
but here's the thing,
intentionally
like,
more dangerous?
He couldn't muscle the thing up either. Like, he was struggling to get it over his head.
As you should. Think about it. You have another human being sitting on top of a ladder, and you're going to press it over your head and toss him over. But anyway,
yeah.
it worked.
Yeah,
it was like, a scary friggin' spot, man.
Yes, it was. All right, so I'm all for Brian Cage winning. I'm all for Brian Cage and Lance Archer, and I will get to that later. Just not, please don't beat Brian Cage on the way to Jon Moxley. Make him undefeated. You know, give him short matches where he's hurting people. Don't make a joke out of him.
And don't push him to the moon right away. You don't put the strap on him. Don't put him in the main event right away.
No,
build that shit up, man. Build it up. Build it up.
Yeah.
As Taz yelled right at the end, right after this match, and Brian Cage won the match, of course. He wins the title shot. And Taz just gets on the... He looks in the camera and he goes, I promise the bodies are going to keep dropping, which is perfect. That's exactly
right.
what you want.
You're only on TV once a week. Brian Cage... There's a lot of guys on the AEW roster that Brian Cage can beat up in minutes and, like, squashes on his way to Jon Moxley. Like,
absolutely.
He should be going into that... into Fyter Fest with no losses. He should be the Ronda Rousey of fucking AEW, just beating
yes.
bitches in minutes. So then when he gets in there with and Moxley should like sell it like this guy's a legit threat to me. He shouldn't win. Moxley should win. You know, but you know, like make him a real.
It needs
like
to be some hijinks, though. You don't want Moxley just pinning him with a double arm DDT, man.
No.
You'd, like, don't do that. Like, if he has to pin him or anything like that, it needs to be with like a lot of plunder and a lot of like you know chaos and anarchy to make sure that you know his shoulder gets pinned to the mat. Don't make it look easy like he did with Brody Lee.
Yeah. All right. Next one, MJF and Jungle Boy had I thought was a 5-star wrestling match. It was the only one of the night.
Like, it looked like, it felt like an episode of Nitro when I was watching the Luchadors. Man, Jungle Boy is great in that ring, I'm telling you right now. And MJF, you can say what he wants. He's sort of like an upgraded version of Miz, you know, with a bit of sass to him.
Mm-hmm.
But, man,
also
these guys can go. They were incredible.
Yeah. No, like, this was like a legit, like, Owen Hart, Davey Boy. Like, I wouldn't go as far as to say it was like Angle, Benoit, or anything. But, like, as far as, like a traditional wrestling match, you know, the kind of thing that wrestling used to be before it became a complete circus, you know, like going back to, like, 96, 97 Nitro, this felt like first hour, maybe second hour,
yep.
two of your best workers in there.
Ultimo Dragon Malenko, that's what this felt like, man.
Yeah,
just and tearing it up.
MJF and Jungle Boy put on a fucking clinic. This was by far, in terms of quality, the best move for move match of the night.
They had a story. They had an excellent, you know, series of matches. The moves and everything made sense. They worked an arm. They, you know, they played off Jungle Boy wearing down that arm, injuring the arm in the match. I mean, Jungle Boy, think about this. He's Luke Perry's son, all right? Just think about how this guy would have performed in WCW. You don't think they would have milked that? You know, Luke Perry's son, he's a absolute fantastic. The whole Jurassic gimmick, man, that would have worked a million times over in Russo-era WCW. I'm telling you now, he would have had that over like a rocket.
Yeah, well, first of all, he'd be riding a real dinosaur if it were fucking
Why not?
Second of all, they'd have put the title on Jason Priestley. Anyway.
Oh, yes. Well done.
But yeah, MJF and Jungle Boy was like, in terms of just being a wrestling fan with no bullshit, was like my favorite match of the night.
I totally agree with you.
So this next one, it was fine. I don't love Cody Rhodes. I never have. And I think he's like, I think he's too big for his britches. You know, he was a mid-card WWE guy for a reason. And like, he puts on halfway decent matches most of the time. But it's like, this guy was like, Vince, I want to be a star. Well, you're a mid-carder. Well, I'm going to start my own company. Okay, Cody. And that's AEW. A company built around a guy that Vince told, no, you're a mid-carder. And Vince wasn't wrong. And then he, because he can't win the world title, because they got to put it on the other WWE guy, the one that was an actual main eventer. So they put the second-tier title on him. Instead of, you're fucking monster, your heel monster that had miles more to go before you just fucking beat him in the ring.
This is the whole problem with the tournament aspect too. So you put a brand new upcoming heel, like you're saying, who's a monster, who's going to be money in the future, especially if WWE gets their hands on him, and you just job him out to Cody, who still has that vibe of being a mid-carder in WWE. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally.
It just doesn't work.
That's my whole argument. Like, Cody built a company of like yes girls around him, including the guy funding the thing, and he's put higher than he deserves for the talent that he has. And
I agree. So, yeah, it was. I mean, this match is a series of power moves and, you know, bear reversals and different things like that. I mean, there wasn't really a lot of depth to the match, but I mean, Cody Rhodes. And what's funny is that it almost exposes Cody here in this situation because, you know, you can really peel back the layers. You can trick yourself into believing that he's a main eventer when you've got a massive audience chanting Cody, Cody, Cody. And when you strip that away and you actually just see poor Cody Rhodes in the ring, you're like, wait a second. This is mid-card. This is dashing Cody Rhodes.
Yeah. This is Stardust. Like, all I see. Whenever he comes out, I'm just like, it's Stardust. And this broad that can't get out away from a camera. His fucking wife.
And now, Mike Tyson. So Mike Tyson has been hyping up charity fights with basically everybody on the internet. It's considered a big coup that he's going to be an enforcer for this particular match. And Tyson comes out, and whatever money they spent on Mike Tyson for this match, it was not worth one nickel. Tyson came out, and he just wanted to have a good time.
He was fucking yawning. Around. They caught him yawning on camera.
He also screwed up one of my favorite spots of the entire night. So they wanted to show that Tyson's in shape, okay? So his one spot was to chase away Jake the Snake Roberts. That was his one spot. He stands on the ramp. He takes his shirt off. He flexes and gets all angry, and Jake runs, okay? Now, he puts the shirt back on. But now he has to have the shirt off when he presents Cody the belt. So he takes the shirt off to present Cody the friggin' belt, which is like, oh my God, it was just so fucking awkward.
This was amateur night in Hicksville. Tyson
and not
was
only
wasted.
That, Tyson wanted to wear the belt. So he comes out with the belt around his waist, like just this really, really awkward weirdness to him. I don't know what it was. And he kept doing it the entire night. It was just, whatever value they had in Mike Tyson, they squandered it here. Just think about how they introduced him on Raw. He was the killer heel. He came out in a suit. He had an entourage. He got in Steve Austin's face. Everybody wanted to see it. You know, he's just killer guy ready to go. Here he's just this, yeah, I'm a huge fan of pro wrestling, you know. Like, it's, oh, man, it was a failure.
They could have had a cardboard cutout of Mike Tyson. Would have had the same effect.
Oh, probably would have been better because he wouldn't have embarrassed himself and kept a shirt on.
So, it was like a two-star match, and the wrong guy won. I know.
And Cody, how did he beat him? He beat him with the Crossroads, didn't he? So he pinned Lance Archer with the Crossroads. Two Crossroads, sorry. Yeah, that makes it better, see?
Yeah, and then they did the whole thing with like Arn got ejected from the match. And Jake the Snake's like distracting the ref while Cody's beating him. Like, it was so ridiculous, the whole thing.
And yes, so that didn't work either. So they were tossing Arn out of there. Now, up to this point, Mike Tyson was pro Cody. He was there chanting at ringside, Cody, Cody, Cody. Then all of a sudden, Arn's getting thrown out. Now, this is the manager of the guy he's cheering for, And Tyson just goes, yeah, get him out of here. Get him out of here. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
Do you even watch this program or what?
No. No, he's gearing up for his fight at Bare Knuckle with Shannon Briggs. I hope.
I can't wait. I can't wait.
I hope that's a real Tyson thing.
A Tyson fight is going to make money, and I can't wait. I'll be right there with you on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Tell Robert Winfrey and Pat Mullen I'm geared up for this.
All right. So after this was the bathroom match. This was this was the Cat versus Ivory back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Fucking everyone's favorite alien, Chris Statlander, and Hockey
Savas. Yes, from the Andromeda Galaxy.
Yep.
Yes.
Dude, not even my daughter buys Chris Statlander. I'm like, hey, Chris Statlander is like an alien. You want to come see a wrestler? She's like, nah. My daughter, little feminist, loves Bailey, loves Sasha Banks. Chris Statlander, she's like, meh. Let me know if there's ever a wrestling mermaid. So, yeah.
Chris Statlander versus the beautiful Penelope Ford, by the way.
Yes.
Just, I mean, this match was just... a sock under the bed type treatment here, man. This was unbelievable. But the thing about Chris Statlander, like, I see the gimmick. I understand where they're going with it and all that. It would work in a WWE, you know, Raw, SmackDown type situation. It doesn't work. It doesn't work here at all.
In the WWE, she would enter in a flying saucer.
Absolutely. You know, they'd put all the pizzazz behind her and jack her up like Max Moon or something.
Yeah.
But one thing that I will say is that she's always seems to be a step off. Like, her work is not crisp. She's you know, half a pace off of her every opponent that she's had so far, and it just comes off sloppy and slow, and she's not there yet, man. She's not ready for prime time yet. I love the gimmick. I like the look. I think there's something there. There's some building blocks there, but a little bit of work left on Chris Statlander to make her seem like she's ready for prime time.
That's a big problem with AEW, with especially the girls, but even some of the guys. And this is what used to be the great thing about NXT, was NXT would wipe a lot of the indie shit, because nobody's saying no in the indies, and nobody is, like, really teaching. You're just having bullshit matches in barns, one right after another, and nobody cares. Nobody cares if you get better. You know, it's just every man for himself, and, you know, you're there to get your $50 fucking paychecks. So, if you step off the indies into AEW, it's assumed, because you've been around, that you're polished. And you're not. That's the problem. Chris Statlander needs a year in NXT to polish her.
Oh, God, yes. I think this whole placement of this match on the card was, you know, it's similar to when they used to put the ladies match on, you know, the pre-Women Power era. When they used to put the women's match on to calm the crowd down, to cool them off before the main event at WrestleMania. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Same situation here. You just came out with, you know, you had Jungle Boy, MJF, and you had Cody and Murder Hawk, you know, lots of kickouts, lots of near falls and all that stuff. So you had to go with, like, a slower pace, you know, straight fall type of situation. So the placement worked here. I thought it was fine, and followed nicely with the next match as well.
They are trying so hard to find something for Cody's best friend to do, Sean Spears. And I think had they gone with, like, a Rush Limbaugh, kind of Sean Hannity, like, conservative news Sean Spears for a few weeks leading up to this, where he's kind of like a Dean Douglas. Remember Dean Douglas, Shane?
Yes, of course.
He gets on camera and he's just like, let me tell you, and he usually just rip down the faces. I think Sean Spears might have worked there. Like, if they promote him up, you know, they gave him some cue cards to read off of, and they did it for a few weeks, this might have done something. They did it for 1 week, and then it's so funny, like, even like their ring crew and wrestler crowd didn't give a shit about Sean Spears. Nobody gave a shit about this match. Nobody.
And they pulled off one of the oldest, most recycled angles in the history of wrestling. So one of the tropes that, you know, is that, you know, wrestler A is, you know, has been knocked out of a match due to injury. My God, they're not going to show up. You know, they have the fake entrance. The guy in the ring has set it up. Nobody's coming out. Gets a big laugh. And, of course, coming from behind or coming out of nowhere is the actual wrestler who we thought wasn't there and gets the win. And that's exactly what this was. It was Super Trope City here. But I'll tell you what, one good thing about it, it was quick. It was fast. It was a straight win by Dustin, and it literally murdered Sean Spears.
Yeah. Sorry,
Vince. This one did damage.
Vince McMahon did the best job of this when it was him and Shane versus Shawn Michaels and God.
Indeed.
So good. All right. I don't know why everyone in this company seems to hate Nyla Rose, but they gave her a short run with the title. They built her up as this killer beast, and then they were like, all right, let's put it on the hot Japanese chick.
Yeah, so here's what happened here, and I guarantee you this is a Vince McMahon moment. This is, oh, you're going to stay off Dynamite when we need you for a pay-per-view due to COVID, are you? Whoa, we're taking the belt from you because you're unreliable. Here you go, Mulan, take the belt and run. That's exactly what happened here, man.
That's fucking funny. Now. I just took a swig of tea, so I couldn't laugh as hard as I wanted to at that. Here you go, Mulan.
Here's the belt. Now, that being said, you know, this match was pretty good, actually. And I'm not a big fan of, you know, Hikaru Shida. You know, Shida? Is that how you spell it? Shida?
Yes. Hikaru Shida.
Yeah. I wasn't a super big fan of her, but you know what? It really worked here, man. I got to be honest with you. But this seemed like just a tribute to that that poor Japanese girl who took her life. You know what I mean?
Sure.
What's her name? Oh, my God. I don't remember her name. How embarrassing.
Yeah, both of us tonight, but, man. Two old. Welcome to Two Old Men Try to Remember Shit. look, it was like they put on a brutal match. Like Hikaru Shida can go, and Nyla Rose can go, and they put on a brutal match. I was listening to Jim Cornette review this, and he was like, "You left nothing for the guys because if what you're doing won't take a girl down, what are the guys supposed to do? Hit each other with cars?" Got a good point.
They did a few things here. Like they were using the kendo stick repeatedly. You know, they had some big power moves going on. I mean, it was a pretty wild brawl at certain times, but it really picked up at the end. And I was shocked that Shida actually pinned her, you know, with a running knee of all things. So, you know, a couple of stiff shots with the kendo stick and a running knee, which I hate, by the way, as a finisher. But anyway, it worked here. Nyla Rose is back quarantining.
Yep. So, yeah, that's fine. Hikaru Shida can go. She, you know, I think she can actually, like, if the girls are willing to listen to her and she's willing to teach, she might be able to polish up some of these, you know, indie girls who are a little clunky in the ring, like a Chris Statlander and some of these other ones that they've had. So, it's fine. I don't hate Hikaru Shida. I just, like, I was a big fan of Nyla Rose. I guess that's why they didn't push her because of the whole COVID thing. It's just a shame. You know, they have a possible star there, and they just keep dropping the ball with her. Sorry, go ahead.
This match, and I know the lady who we're talking about now. Her name is Hana Kimura. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she died because of cyberbullying and a whole really bad story all the way around there. But, you know, she was friends with the Elite. So I think this match literally happened because, you know, it's just a high sign to this lady's death, and you know, Mulan reaped the benefits, I guess.
Sure. I love Jon Moxley. Other than Lance Archer, he's like my other favorite character in AEW, and we've talked at length about Mr. Brody Lee. They did the Bam Bam Bigelow like Taz finish where they went through the fucking ring.
They went through a platform outside the ring, wasn't it?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't see it coming. I literally did not see this one coming. So they were basically on an elevated ramp, okay? So they had one step down. So they were, you know, positioning themselves, and I did not see this coming. And, of course, they did. What move did they do? A backdrop or what move did he use? I can't remember.
I don't remember at this point.
Anyway, both wrestlers collide. Right, they went on down through the this big, you know, fixture, and there was your match.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to say it, but Jon Moxley needs to be led. Like, he's not the guy. Like, I think he can rise to the occasion. Like, there are just some wrestlers who need to not be the guy calling it in the ring.
Yep.
And Brody Lee certainly needs to be led by the nose. So you have two
big time.
So you have two guys who can work and can sell but can't put together a match, and Jon Moxley works best in like wild brawls.
So that's why they're out on the stage, and the move was actually the paradigm shift. So he gave him a DDT through the rampway, right? So I mean, like you said in your point, like these guys are waiting for each other to lead, and they sort of like waiting for each other's cue to meet the moves, and the match just seems unnatural in that way, you know what I mean? So I agree 100%.
Yeah, this really lacked life, and then doing a stunt at the end didn't really impress me. You know, I
but that wasn't even the finish.
No, no, then he had to like come out of there. Like, that should have been the end of it.
Yeah, but you know what? They did the right thing here somewhat, so I'm going to agree with this ending, even though it was a little dumb. So, you know, fake Vince McMahon had to be put in the rear naked choke, the sleeper, whatever, and then he passed out due to ref stoppage. So, you know, dude, no harm, no foul with Brody Lee, right?
If you're playing basketball and, like, you shatter a rim, fucking game's over.
Yes, the game is over.
If you're playing baseball and you, like, swing the bat and you, like, clobber the catcher, so somehow, game's over. The game stops. You know, it's like, come on, man. You can't go through the fucking stage like that. Like, that should have been it. Like, at that point, the ref should have been, like, called for the bell, you know, and they should have stretched them both out. And that way, it protects Brody Lee and keeps the title on Jon Moxley. And then Jon Moxley, as he's going out on the stretcher, could have been, like, you know...
middle finger in the air.
Middle finger in the air, or die, or... dive off the stretcher and, like, attack some people in the Dark Order or something.
Yeah.
You know.
They just need attacking, yes.
Steal the ambulance. That'd have been great.
That was, you know what? That was actually what was missing. Some more anarchy from the Dark Order. So, you know, he should have been knocking away, like, minions of the Dark Order all over the place. But we didn't really get to see that. We had more of a straight contest between the both men, which was really weird.
Yeah.
If this is the leader of the Dark Order, he should have his minions everywhere, plants in the crowd, you name it, fake ref. It should be all over the place, but they didn't. They just had a straight match, and Brody Lee lost.
And that's the thing. Like, maybe, you know, leading in the weeks leading up to Fyter Fest, you know, he'll still continue somewhat his feud with the Dark Order, and then transitioned into Brian Cage. So they have to leave something for Dynamite, but still. Then just fucking end it in the, you know, when they go through the stage then. Don't have him beat the guy. And it's like, oh, well, he went unconscious.
Exactly.
He got beaten. That's how that works. All right.
Yeah.
In a match that was booked and that was laid out. Gosh, what do they call the guys that lay out the matches? Agent.
Well,
in a match that was agented by Bugs Bunny.
This was the Looney Tunes main event. It was. And it was epic.
Yeah, this was brought to you by the Animaniacs. Yakko, Wacko, and Dot. Oh my god. The Elite, Matt Hardy versus the Inner Circle. I loved how the Inner Circle, you know, like when they did the weigh-ins a couple of weeks ago, they all came out with like the Gracie thing. They were all like in jumpsuits. You know, they had the hands on their shoulders and everything. This one, they're in fucking Inner Circle jerseys, and two of them have helmets.
Fucking I loved it. I thought that was amazing. I loved the entrances. So they had football-style entrances for both teams.
Right.
And they had to run a long way to meet each other at this field, man. I guarantee you. This was a jaunt.
Let me say this going into this. And you and I talked a little bit offline. I know that there's like the Jim Cornette sort of philosophy out there. This isn't wrestling. He's not wrong. You have a choice with this stuff. You have a choice with, like, the Boneyard match, the Firefly Funhouse, Money in the Bank, this. Either accept that this is going to be television entertainment and not wrestling, or don't watch it. Just don't watch.
Because This right here is AEW's answer to the Boneyard match and the Cena Wyatt match. This is their call out to it, and I think that they actually did a better job on both on all occasions. I think here,
look, they went for it. They went for it. They totally went for silly. They went for, you know, a lot of comedy spots. They went for very broad, pie in the face. Of vaudeville humor.
Yes, they did.
Either,
and I laughed my ass off the entire time.
And either you accept that. I said on Twitter, you know, like, you know, fans who didn't buy into the cinematic matches, that thought the Boneyard match and
loved it.
the Firefly Funhouse with like the worst things ever, and like, you know, the worst thing to come out of this pandemic era are cinematic matches. And I was like, so I wrote that line. I was like, fans, this is the cinematic WWE cinematic matches are the worst things in wrestling. And then AEW, hold my beer.
Exactly.
And here's the thing. As a wrestling fan, this is the worst thing. This is just the worst. This is the stupidest thing. Other than the Firefly Funhouse, which wasn't wrestling at all.
Somewhere, Vern Gagne and Lou Thesz are rolling over in their graves right now.
Yeah, they're like, they're like doing like the Joe Piscopo thing from Johnny Dangerously. I'm afraid to tell people I was a wrestler. Last night I told somebody I was a male nurse.
Well done.
So, on the other hand, I like to laugh. I like a good pie in the face. I like seeing somebody being run down by a horse. So
good. One of the best visuals you'll ever see in the history of a wrestling angle right there. That was amazing.
I love the running gag of, like, Sammy Guevara running away from some sort of ridden object.
It was so much fun. He got chased down by all sorts of equipment. He got chased down with a guy on a horseback, which was epic. Adam Page came out on a white stallion, and it was amazing. And then the boys chased him down with one of the arena carts, yes, which was even funnier, which was great again.
Dude, Sammy, I showed my wife the bump he took on Dynamite with the bump he took off the cart, and my wife's like, he jumped into that, but that looked nasty. The point that I was getting to, and then we can talk about the match. Either accept the fact that this is a cartoon or don't watch. And I went into it going, I know this is going to be a cartoon. It was evident from the start. And I just took a deep breath and was like, wrestling is dead. D-E-D. Dead. I don't know. There's nowhere to find it. If you want wrestling, you're going to have to settle for MMA. Because it doesn't exist anywhere else. Now, if you just want to watch cartoon violence with big hulky men, then this is for you. And that's what this was. Exactly.
Yes, sir.
So them coming out with all the football gear was hilarious. The Elite, you know, whatever, their entrance was blah. Paige coming in on a fucking horse and running Sammy Guevara down. I was in tears. I don't know if people can tell from tonight's show. I'm struggling with air. I'm laughing my ass off and like alternately coughing. I'm dying laughing and coughing and crying. Oh my god, I was so funny to me. So Paige and Guevara fuck off for a while, and there's a lot of brawling, and there were a lot of silly spots. And I have to say, for the most part, most of this match, as far as wild brawls and cartoon violence are concerned, I was entertained by. It lost me in one spot. And this is why I started the show the way that I did. It lost me when Proud and Powerful were drowning Matt Hardy, and every time he came up, he changed gimmicks, including the Matt Fax from when he was version 2.0.
Speaking of that, how is there not a lawsuit with that? Seriously. he's literally calling himself V2 in a AEW setting. You know what I mean?
Like, I kept waiting to hear, oh, yeah!
he even gave a Mattitude fact, which was hilarious.
Yeah, that's when, even wrong, with all my preamble there, I was like, nope, this has hit a level of stupid I can't even deal with anymore.
Yeah, there was a lot of things. I mean, the match started with a brawl out on the gridiron, of course. Mm-hmm. And then you had like they had like a couple weird spots. So you had Matt Jackson, he climbed a ladder and literally did a moonsault off the football goalpost, which was pretty cool. Only a two count though, by the way.
Sure.
Then you had Santana and Ortiz, they were double teaming Omega, you know what I mean? Their boys were fighting, you know, they had the horseback going in the background. You had Matt Hardy doing his thing. You had the bar scene. I love the bar scene.
Oh, yeah. The bar scene needed music, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So to make matters short, so you had Adam Page tracking down Sammy Guevara on horseback. So he stops, and you think he's ready to enter the field on foot. Instead, he takes a right turn. He goes to the bar, and he commences to drink. Now he's
you come here to drink? You come here to fight.
It was so good. So who joined him at the bar? Wasn't it Kenny Omega?
No, that you're talking from the Inner Circle. That because yes. That was
who was it?
Oh gosh, what's his name? Jake Hagar.
Hagar, yeah. Hagar joins him at the bar, and they have a wild brawl in the backstage area. That was so cool. Now, this thing ended when they got up on a huge platform. Now, this is where, you know, some stupid Matt Hardy stuff came in. We were introduced to Neo 1, the upgraded Vanguard 1, of course. Ugh. And Omega took Sammy down. He gave him the one winged angel. And, I mean, this is like they're high atop the arena here, man. And he gives him the one wing angel down through just his, you know, obviously stage platform, and they get the win. And of course, then they did the whole Gatorade celebration. But man, that was a fall, brother. I guarantee you. Holy sweet Jesus. Shane McMahon should have been going, whoa, here. That was crazy. What do you think of that ending?
It was fine. Not like a Rattledge fine. I mean, like a real fine.
It wasn't the drizzling shits is what you're saying.
No, I mean, like, they were looking for an impactful move. I hope to God that Kenny Omega was able to protect him. Like, Sammy Guevara is one of these guys who's too good for AEW.
Oh, man. He is... What a breakout star. I remember on the first episode of Dynamite, Sammy Guevara came out and he fought Cody Rhodes and he was wearing this stupid wolf head or something. I can't remember what it was.
It was the panda.
Yeah, the panda.
Dude, we've been doing these for a while. We've been doing these since last summer. And both me and you were like, what's with the fucking panda head, you nerd?
Yeah, yeah. It was really, really weird. But anyway, man, has that guy come a long way. He's got the Spanish God gimmick and Jericho has done wonders for this kid's career, man. Like, it boosted him. He's in the... you know, he's in the Inner Circle, and what a faction to be in, man. It's one of the coolest factions on the go right now, and definitely one of the better things that AEW has done with their short time in the business, for sure.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Him and MJF really need to, like, leave AEW and go to NXT.
Murderhawk with him, too. Murderhawk.
Where I think they would blossom. The problem with Sammy Guevara is he's got a very low ceiling in the WWE. Like he's got to be doing the math of, I get paid well here, and I get treated like a star. And if I go to WWE, sure, you know, that's considered, you know, the height of heights. But I mean, look at like a Drake Maverick, you know, look at the way they treat cruiserweights. He's such a small guy. Like he's so good, he'll never be used to his potential. Now MJF's got some size on him, so MJF could be like a future superstar, and he definitely needs to be brought up to NXT.
Oh.
And eventually the main roster after Vince dies. But, and that's the thing. Maybe Sammy Guevara, maybe, you know, how much longer could Vince possibly go on? But maybe after Vince goes away and Triple H is running the show, or Disney or whatever, you know, and they don't shit on all the smaller guys, maybe there'll be a place for WWE for Sammy Guevara. Because of all the guys in AEW, him and MJF really are like the two like breakout stars that are too big, potentially too big for AEW. Overall, and let me talk about the match and then the whole show. So overall, I thought the match was silly. I laughed a lot at a lot of it. You know, the barroom brawl was funny. Chris Jericho arguing with Aubrey Edwards about, you know, what a terrible ref she is. That was funny. The stuff with Matt was beyond stupid and makes me just want to piss on the whole program. There, you know, Sammy Guevara being chased by a horse. never fails to make me laugh.
That's probably the best image coming out of this whole pay-per-view right there.
I think the Elite needed a good win, and I think it's one of those things where you don't have a crowd, so you have an opportunity to experiment. And so this gets high marks in terms of thinking out of the box. Like, what can we do when you have no crowd to give an interesting visual? And I think where that's concerned, they were successful. This was not wrestling, but I don't think it was meant to be. And it was very entertaining for the most part, minus the Matt Hardy gimmick change.
I think if we're stacking this up and we're taking a look at what WWE served up with the Boneyard match and the Firefly Funhouse thing, I think it's better than the Wyatt situation, but I don't think it beat the Boneyard match, in all honesty. I think the Boneyard match was you know, more slick, more streamlined, told a better story, got Taker over. You know, I think it was a win all the way around the board. The Funhouse was similar to this with the slapstick, chaotic humor stuff happening all over the place, but I think this smoked it.
The Firefly Funhouse was more of an angle about what a douche John Cena is. I almost don't want to count it. I would compare this to the Boneyard, and I would compare it to Money in the Bank. And I laughed. There was
There you go. Let's compare it to Money in the Bank. That's exactly what this is.
I think Money in the Bank edges this out. There was nothing in Money in the Bank that made me go, nope, this is too stupid. I can't even handle it. And not even
Dana Brooke pulling down the fake case.
Well, she's a moron, but she didn't do magic.
Fair enough. That's cool.
You know, the same thing with being like murdering fucking Baron Corbin, the douche, as my son calls him, murdering two people. It's like, okay, well, they fell onto like a platform, and you could clearly see from a helicopter view.
Yeah.
Fine. They weren't trying to sell you that they fell from, 100 feet in the air.
Exactly.
So Money in the Bank edges this out ever so slightly. You take out the Matt Hardy thing, and I would actually say this was better.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. The Matt Hardy thing was just this. It was almost like you're hitting the stop button on a movie. You're like, whoa, this is out of place here.
Well, it's like you're watching Schindler's List, and a pink elephant runs by. What the fuck? Why was that in here? Well, the pink. Someone really wanted a pink elephant in Schindler's List. Okay, but for what we're doing here, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but someone really wanted a pink elephant in there, and we don't know how to say no. So, overall, this was okay. You know, the ladder match. Who doesn't like to see guys fall off ladders? And it was entertaining, and the right guy won. MJF Jungle Boy was great, and then there was like garbage in the middle, like three straight matches of like meh.
Well, you had a championship tournament end. We didn't talk about the belt. Let's talk about the belt.
Oh, the belt that you can like buy in a Kmart.
Wow, you talk. Now they even made an excuse for it. They said that they didn't even have time to put gold plating on it. This thing is a red leather strap with a like silver faceplate.
Yeah.
and it looked really cheap. It looked like a kid's title.
Yeah. It looked like something you'd buy for a child in Kmart.
And they basically did, because I think Tyson wanted to take that thing home, and he probably did.
Don't argue.
He's home wearing it with no shirt on right now.
Just posing. I'm going to get to you, Andre the Giant. All right.
Cone stowed.
So, yeah, I liked Revolution better than this. This was a lot of meh in the middle with some good stuff on the outsides. It wasn't great. It's one of those where like I either had kind of a nonplussed reaction or I was laughing, but there was nothing in this where I was like, fuck yeah, man, wrestling. So I'm gonna let you have the final word, and then we'll get out of here.
I'm gonna be the yin to your yang here on this one. So this one actually took me out of the moment. I forgot that we were even in the COVID era. It felt like an actual legit pay-per-view. I was entertained the entire way through. Yes, it did have bumps in the road and it had its trash, but it felt like watching wrestling the way it should have been. It felt like it had an actual audience, which it didn't, so it did its homework. Mm-hmm. They had that screwball main event, which was all sorts of chaos. And, outside of the mid-area section, I mean, it had a lot of stuff that kept me entertained, so I'm going to give it a thumbs up on this one, man.
Did you like this better than Revolution?
No, I didn't like it better than Revolution.
Okay, so at least we agree that Revolution was better.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, Revolution was better. It was two different animals there, I think. But this one, for what they were working with, I think they pulled off pretty good. I mean, you had Brian Cage. You had a title change. You had a crazy main event with Brody Lee, seeing him lose. And then you had that spectacle at the end. So there was four tent poles to this whole show here. So I was pleased.
All right, that's our coverage of AEW Double or Nothing. Chris and I will do Fighter Fest whenever they pick a date for it. In terms of more wrestling coverage, we've got NXT TakeOver in your house the 7th. And so we're going to review that Tuesday, June 9th. And then we have Backlash, June 14th. We will review it Tuesday night, June 16th.
Yes, sir.
So that's what we got going on right now as far as wrestling in the month of June. AEW won't have another show for a couple of months. So, all right, that's that. You can catch myself and Alexis Haina. We did the Three Caballeros Ride Again book, which was book 9 of the Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck Don Rosa library.
Oh, I got to check that out. That's been some good stuff. What do you think of that? Yeah.
Don Rosa's great. We talked a lot about The Life and Times of Uncle Scrooge, which is a book I'd actually like to cover in long form. I own that. It's really super good. I was telling Alexis, like, I don't understand why this hasn't been made into a full-length movie. But, the Don Rosa Disney stuff is fucking amazing.
Oh.
This Thursday...
Speaking of amazing, I got to put over something before you continue on with your schedule. I got to put over your Scoob show with Alexis and Robert. There was one point where I was driving in my vehicle and I almost went off the road. So Alexis started to do a Dynamite impression when Mark asked her if she was having a stroke. It was amazing. You have to check out the Scoob show. I love it. Anyway, continue on. Schedule.
Yes. This Thursday, myself and Alexis Haina will do a TV party for Legend of the Three Caballeros. Next week, Alexis Haina and I do another live source material. We'll be looking at Catwoman, When in Rome. And then the next day is my birthday. I'll be 44 years old. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to celebrate my birthday by taking up Robert Winfrey on his challenge. He says, I can't handle Devilman Crybaby, that it'll shatter my soul. So we're going to do a TV party on that because I don't back down from any challenge. I ain't no mamby-pamby. I have begged Jesse Starcher to come back for the next month of Wednesdays. So the Metal Hammer of Doom returns in June.
Yes. Jesse's paying America, people. You got to give him a break.
Yes. Jesse's not going to be doing anything else in the month of June, but he promised me he would do the Metal Hammer of Doom. So we've got Ailstorm, Curse of the Crystal Coconut on June 3rd. We've got Static X, Project Regeneration, June 10th. Termion Catalot on June 17th. The New Lamb of God, June 24th. And then July 1st is Mushroom Head, A Wonderful World. So hopefully by then, Jesse will be... Hopefully in July we'll have Jesse back. But until then, we'll keep the home fires burning. We'll keep Sorth material alive. Keep it alive.
Yes,
and then finally, June 4th, myself and myself and Pat Mullen will continue our look at the history of the heavyweight boxing championship of the world. This time with Smokin' Joe Frazier.
So, and that series is really great, too. I'm really enjoying that stuff. I only started that recently. But Mullen, he needs to be a member of the Podsman, brother. That guy's got some chops when it comes to the fighting.
He does. He and I reviewed Dark Side of the Ring.
Fantastic episode.
We took a brief look at Season 1, and then we did a deep dive into Season 2. Pat really knows his stuff. He fucking hates AEW.
That's even better. That's why we need him on the show.
He is Jim Cornette's illegitimate son. So where I can tolerate it and sort of, you know, I can compartmentalize, like, hey, I like vaudeville. I like silly things. I like stand-up comedy. AEW, it's fine. Pat's like, nope. So.
Oh, well.
All right, that's all
maybe,
I got.
Maybe for the WWE stuff. What do you think?
Yeah,
I'm calling out you, Pat Mullen. Get out of here.
If I can get him to watch it. I think we've had him on for like some of the UK shows. Like when he's into it, he'll do it. But it's hard to get him into things. All right, I am running out of breath. So you do your plugs, and then we'll get out of here.
All right, you can find me on the Twitter machine at Charlton_hero. And if you're a Charlton Hero fan, you can also find me on June 24th. We're having another super blog team up, and Mr. Radlich is part of that as well. And Jesse Starcher is coming out of retirement as well for this one. And this time, our topic is expanded universes. So we're going to be blowing up some franchises and discussing some of the extra, the over and above, the expansion of some franchises, the good, the bad, and the ugly all over the place. So you're not only going to get your Star Trek and your Star Wars, you're going to get a whole lot more stuff you never thought about. So there you go. That's Super Blog Team Up, June 24th. I'm Chris Bailey. I'm Canadian, and I'm proud of that. There you go.
Flash.
Let's get out of here, Mark Radlish, before you die. Flash.
He'll save every one of us. Scantily clad women. It. All right. Thank you for joining us.
Penelope Ford.
Yes. Thank you for joining us here on a TV party tonight for Chris Bailey. I'm your mandated reporter, Mr. Mark Radlidge. Be well, be safe, and behave.